Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 89. And we are live tonight on both DLive and RadioAlbion.com. So if you want a video feed, there is a video feed on DLive. If you want a video feed on Radio Albion, there is one there too. And also there is an audio only stream on RadioAlbion.com. If you are having problems with BitChute buffering or any issues with the video stream here on DLive. So if you would like to contribute to this show, that would be very, very kind of you. Now, there are a number of ways you can contribute to the show. The first is by using Entropy. I am just going to drop the Entropy link into the chat now. That is in the live chat on DLive. So if you want to contribute by Entropy, that is the best way. You can send super chats. They are paid donations with a comment attached. Any super chats will be read out live on air. You can ask non-paid questions. Non-paid questions are voted on. The best non-paid questions will be asked to the panel or the relevant person will read out if they're just a statement. You can go to my BitChute account and give Bitcoin if you wish. And that would be really helpful. Any crypto donations, very, very helpful, gratefully received. And if you want to email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, you can donate in other ways. I can send you details of how to make a bank transfer. Now, you can also subscribe to this channel now. So if you want to subscribe to this channel, you can. I've set up a subscription thingy. I didn't even know this existed. Somebody told me about it. So you can have followers and subscribers. So if you want to support my channel and you get a little badge saying that you are a PWR sub, I know it's not much. It's just something that appears by your name, but you can now subscribe. I believe I have one subscriber. Somebody was ahead of the game and got in there before the show started tonight, but you can now subscribe to my DLive channel. I'm not sure how much that costs, but it is there as an option. And of course, if you sub, you will have a little logo by your name saying that you are a subscriber and that you have joined the club. So thank you in advance to anyone who does that. Now, obviously, I'm not on Twitter. I am on Telegram. I am on Gab. Parler is no longer with us. It is dead. I am also on BitChute. So if you want to share this, please share it on Twitter for me. That's a major, major help. And also, the replay will be on BitChute. So if you enjoy the show and you want to share it to people, look it up on BitChute afterwards. I upload it straight after this show. It comes up a few hours later. It takes a while to process with BitChute. But once it's up there and you can share it. And that is very, very much appreciated. So the replay of it will be on BitChute along with all my other videos. Now, I made a very, very well-received video on Friday about the death of Ashley Babbitt. It is up there on BitChute. It got in the trending section, which I was very, very happy with. So thank you to everyone who supported it. But if you haven't seen it, you can still see it. And I will have another video just like that about Q. It'll be coming out on Friday, and it's called Q, Disinformation, Lies, and Subversion. The Q movement was all a complete farce. I said from the beginning I didn't really I didn't think it held any water whatsoever. But I am now making a video on it. I'm pulling it to pieces. I'm giving my impressions. It's about an 8-minute video, but hopefully people will like it. Please share it to people and share it to any Q-tards still out there who need to give their head a wobble and realize that there was no master plan. Now, we have one last piece of information before I pass it over to Jason, and that is it is the lovely Jodie Kay's birthday today. So happy birthday, Jodie Kay. I'm not sure how old she is, and I know it's impolite to ask a woman that question, so I won't be asking it. But happy birthday, Jodie. I hope you had a lovely day, and I believe she's holding a stream after this show. I will be appearing on her birthday stream. That will be on YouTube. I'm sure the good people in the chat and the mods will put the link in there towards the end of the show. So after the show, there will be more great nationalist content. Please hop on over to Jodie's stream and give her some support. But that's my little intro done. So, Jason, how are you this week, my friend? Didn't attend the Biden inauguration then? Didn't go there to see the Q-funded military coup?
Well, how do you know I didn't go to that inauguration? I mean, I was just licking my lips at the possibility of heading down the road and then being denied entry to Washington, D.C. by the United States military, a spectacle that we've never seen before, at least that I can recall in the United States, with the military, this very bizarre, these giant fences, chain link fences erected by the military, and then the soldiers with their weapons beyond this cage that they have built to keep American citizenry out from the exercise and so-called transfer of power to one President rigor mortis, I mean Joe Biden. And yeah, spectacle, needless to say. I do want to acknowledge, as we are wont to do lately, one of our great contributors and participants, and that's Anglo America. And I'll drop his link in the live chat at some point over the course of the stream today. But we had TAP yesterday, believe it or not, the after party last night, and we had on Lovely Porridge, and it was magnificent. If you haven't seen it, if you didn't catch it, please watch it and rerun. But I want to jump right into this great conversation today because, ladies and gentlemen, we have a dear friend of mine, Dr. Kevin McDonald, and this is a man with an absolutely coruscating mind and a courage to match, because, you know, in academia, there are plenty who could speak up about this in academia who the slightest word, it's like trying to go into the Republican Party and openly talk about Western kind and our well-being. They have an immune system to immediately purge you, attack you, ridicule you, slander you, ostracize you, make you feel like you are an unwanted human being. And for them, the anti-whites, you are. And so it is a true pleasure to have him back on with us today, and looking forward to a great conversation.
Well, we are now going to get to our special guest. Now, firstly, I have to issue an apology to this special guest. We haven't had him on for an awfully long time, and that is something that I am pleased we are rectifying tonight, because this guy is incredible. Now, I have also had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Kevin McDonald in real life, hearing him speak in real life, and I've had the pleasure of spending some time in his company. He is an incredible man. He is an incredible mind. His book, The Culture of Critique, is possibly the greatest book ever written on Jewish influence and Jewish power. And if you haven't read it, you should. That book is an education in of itself. It's absolutely wonderful. This man has been fighting for our cause. He has exposed the very heart of those who are conspiring to destroy Western civilization. And it is an honor and a privilege to be able to welcome him here tonight. Dr. Kevin McDonald, please introduce yourself. Please tell everyone where we can find you. Tell us a bit about your work and also how we can contribute to that work.
Yes, it's great to be here, two old friends. And Mark, I really appreciate both you guys are great speakers. I've seen you speak in person, and I can only envy how well you guys speak. But anyway, I'm still working hard. I published a book last year on us, on Western people's individualism and the Western liberal tradition. And so I'm keep working. I'm the editor of Occidental Observer and Occidental Quarterly, and we're continuing that. I think part of the whole thing is to persevere in this. There's a lot of people that come and go, and we have to hang in there. You know, times are bad right now. They may get very much worse. With the Biden administration threatening the end of free speech, we see already the end of free speech with the big tech companies, the social media companies. We have to sort of treasure these times that we can still get the word out in some places. I see you're on StreamYard. All my videos have been taken off YouTube, and I'm sure yours have. You're not on Twitter. I'm still on Twitter, but it's tenuous. I just don't know what will happen.
Well, thank you. And I'm sorry to hear about your deplatforming from YouTube. I've moved most of my work over to BitChute. I've being deplatformed from Twitter. I had 60,000 followers there, but I've now got two cozy new homes, Gab and Telegram. So I am doing okay over there. But there is one pressing question tonight, Kevin, and it's a question that I want to pose to you, my friend. Biden's top 10 political appointments for his new regime are all Jewish.
Right.
Is this just a coincidence?
Hardly a coincidence. It's really a marker of Jewish power in America. And, with the Trump administration, certainly he had basically a different set of Jews. And he had Jared Kushner, who was a real cancer on the administration from the beginning. And then Ivanka might as well have been Jewish. She's married to him. And there was just a lot of Jewish influence with a sort of more orthodox part of it. You look at some of these appointments, Blinken as Secretary of State, and Wendy Sherman, and what's her name? She's the one that Victoria Nuland, the one that really had a huge role in the Ukraine thing. These are basically neocons, and they are going to go after Russia. There's going to be more wars. Israel is going to be fine. They may try to re-enter the Iran deal, but I think Blinken was in charge, or one of these guys was in charge of the Iran sanctions, and they've been very tough on Iran. And of course, Israel has wanted a war with Iran for a very long time, and it's about the only thing that Trump didn't do for Sheldon Adelson and his contributors. But there's a very, very strong Jewish influence in here. There's an article in the Forward saying that you can have a sort of Jewish minyan, a sort of quorum, to have a religious service in the cabinet. It's that much of an influence. But it really is an indication of the very powerful place that Jews have in American life on both sides of the aisle. And that is really our biggest problem, because now we see, the first thing Biden's going to do is increase immigration. He's going to amnesty illegal immigrants. That's the agenda.
So when I saw this today, my mind jumped to two places, and you might find this interesting, but I have seen two particular commentators who have, over the last few years, risen to such incredible prominence that those two people are more or less household names now. Now, one of those people is Tommy Robinson. And he claims everything is down to the Muslims. Now, the other one is Alex Jones, and he claims that it's all down to numerous people, but recently he has moved on to the Chinese. He claimed that it's all some kind of gigantic Chinese conspiracy, and the Chinese are taking over America. Yet when I look at Biden's cabinet, I don't see any people of Chinese descent. I don't see any Orientals. I don't see any Muslims. I just see one ethnicity that is vastly overrepresented. And the problem with this ethnicity being vastly overrepresented is it's not just a tenfold overrepresentation. It's something like a 50-fold overrepresentation, because out of those Jews make up around 2% of the population in the US, yet they hold all 10 of those positions. 100% of those most powerful positions are held by Jews. Now, this is an issue for two reasons. Firstly, like I said, none of the Sivnats or people like Alex Jones or these people in the Truther community will ever make an issue with this. They're just going to completely ignore it, which is farcical in itself. But the other people that will ignore this is the left. Now, if there had been 10 white people appointed to those positions, be they male or female, it wouldn't have mattered. If 10 white people had taken those 10 top positions, what would have happened would have been incredible. You would have seen marches, you'd have seen riots, you would have seen trouble on the streets, you would have seen serious disorder all over America. And I believe that would have been fueled by the Democrats, and it would have been fueled primarily by Black Lives Matter. They would have been the group that was at the center of this. But with it being Jews, not a word will be said. The very people who have seeded our population with the idea of white privilege and who have told us as a people to give up our positions, to diversify, have completely taken over these leading positions, meaning that there is zero diversity there at all, but there will be no complaints about that. What are your thoughts on those issues, Kevin?
Yeah, I think it's a good indication that the media and people are very well aware of all the Jews in the cabinet, and they don't really consider them white, which is exactly right. I mean, they don't have a sort of sense of being white, a sense of being having European ancestry. They are Jewish, and the article in the foreword that talked about their biographies said that they are very committed, involved Jews. These are not just people that had some kind of Jewish background. They're very much Jews. And I'm looking at his other appointments. The only white males, by the look of it, are like the Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of Veteran Affairs. These are people really without any political, they're not really the guts of this administration. But when you talk about the Secretary of State and the Chief of Staff, and all those other people at the Secretary of State, and then the Treasury, very important positions. And so that's where the power is. And then the other guy, the head of Homeland Security, this Mallorca, I forget his name, but it says he's sort of Cuban-American as well, and so he gets lots of points for diversity. But he's typical Jewish in his attitudes towards immigration, but that's the thing. And then Merrick Garland is Attorney General. The power in that administration is clearly in Jewish hands. All the really powerful central positions are held by Jews. That's just really a testament. And the fact that the media doesn't complain about that, because God knows if you had white Protestants, males in those positions, they'd be screaming. Actually, I'm a little surprised that they're really not that many blacks in the cabinet. And I think they've complained about that. They got Hispanic, they got women, of course, they got Asians, they got all kinds of people, but they really don't have very many blacks at the top of this administration. I think they're a little unhappy about that.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to take a second to discuss something. People are complaining in the chat on DLive that they can't donate lemons. That's because this stream is what's known as X-tagged. I forgot to actually change the name. Well, actually, I tried to change the name of the stream and pop the correct thumbnail in earlier. And for some reason, it didn't save. The last thing I did on this channel was the Godfather review with Laura, Horace, and Nativist Concerns. That wasn't X-tagged, so you could donate to that. You cannot donate to this stream anymore through Lemons. You can sub the channel. But if you would like to make a donation, you can use Entropy. We are now moving into a phase where any form of donation is being shut down for us. So Entropy is a safe place for us. It's a place where we still can take donations. So I'm sorry you can't donate lemons to this stream. I'm sorry that you can't donate anything anymore through DLive to any stream that's X-tagged. But if you would like to jump on over to Entropy, you can make donations that way, and they would be gratefully appreciated. Obviously, I will be doing some streams on this channel which aren't X-tagged, and those streams are non-politics ones, like the gaming streams or other things. At that time, you will be able to sub or give lemons, but you can't. So sorry for that interruption to the show. But anyway, Jason, do you have any questions, my friend?
Well, yeah, I mean, I could add right now to what you were, Mark, what you were just mentioning there about shutting off the ability to financially support those who speak up for the well-being of Western kind. And this is from the Federalist, This is, it said, the title of the article is Democrats Pledge to Fight Trump Rule, Ensuring Banks Won't Refuse Service to Conservatives. And the article goes through, and we have seen, of course, the anti-whites at banks. Probably most people know about Henrik and Lana losing their ability to use banks. You get put on this list, and if anybody knows the name of the list, it's international. I think the list is used for all banking, and that it's a list that all banks refer to. It's electronic. Once they get your name onto it, it's associated with drug runners and child runners, all of this kind of garbage. And so they got their names on it. Everywhere they go to try to get an account, they have issues as a consequence of it. And I see somebody asking about X-Tagged, and I'll just answer that question and then give a question to our great guest here today. The X-Tag is all things related to news on DLive. And that was a way that they identified news giving channels and content creators that were doing things other than just playing games or talking about other topics. And now they have moved in the wake of what happened on what I refer to as Patriots Day, January 6, 21, when the American Patriots went to make their voice heard at the Capitol, supposed to be their house. And then it was the death of innocence for the Patriot that day when they learned for the first time that the country is not in their hands. DLive followed suit with many other platforms to prevent the financial gifting by preventing folks from gifting to channels that are X-tagged. And of course, that would cover everyone who is white positive, and they'll probably narrow that back to just folks like us. But what I want to ask my dear friend here, Dr. Kevin McDonald, I watched the speech. I tortured myself. I decided to get into some method acting of a masochist, and I watched this horrible. I wanted to see. Well, of course, I was also waiting for the Q people to fly in with helicopters and do whatever they were going to do. it just never materialized. I don't know why. All my faith invested over all of it.
Yeah, that was.
It's just, I don't know what happened. But we had some, we had Biden mention a number of things over the course of this speech. He spoke about, and of course, this is paraphrased. He talked about racial justice will no longer be deferred, that they're not going to just wait anymore. He also talked about white supremacism. He put these words side by side. And when we hear anti-whites say things like white supremacism, they're talking about white people who aren't anti-white. White supremacism, and he put right beside that the title domestic terrorists, that they will be defeated during this coming term. And it won't be just in words, he said ominously. He wants to unite the country against extremism and hatred. And we know, again, that means white people who aren't anti-white. He says that his administration is going to finally deliver racial justice. He talked about how the history of the United States was a history of the anti-white slurs, racism, and nativism. And that has been tearing us apart. He spoke about the need for unity and clearly defining unity as unity against those who he was naming as the demons just prior, white people who aren't anti-white. He referred to the Trump supporters on Patriot Day as a riotous mob. And then he very ominously said that we are facing a growing systemic racism, that it is growing and getting stressed in this monster they have to fight. So he has said, and we see other members of the cabinet and Democrat leaders talking about many things, talking about loyalty oaths to Biden and the Democrat Party, which could potentially create something akin of the Praetorian Guard, purging National Guards members who are white and who voted for Trump or who have in their families. By the way, folks should really know this if you don't know this. National Guard members, the Democrats have been sending out messages saying, if any of your family members are in the National Guard and you know them to be conservative or have voted for Trump, please call this number at the FBI to report them to the FBI. This is very serious. So what I want to ask Dr. McDonald here is that when we see these actions, we see what the, we see what these people celebrate, and we see their actions that they are that they are intent on engaging in and moving forward, what they say the real threat is, aren't we or are we seeing the motivations of a group of people who have survived very well around the world in other groups of people? And these acts as acts and if accomplished deeds that would secure their power, that would secure their status, that would secure their wealth. And what would you then say to those group actions, those group activities, and the success of that, and marking it moving forward over the next 4 years as signs that we can see, highway markers, if you will, this I'll call it like a victory strategy rather than a survival strategy, because well beyond survival, right? A victory strategy. What will be these highway markers that we will be able to see to say, aha, there again, we are seeing this victory strategy in effect in our society, please.
There's no question that the mainstream Jewish community, where the power is, has advocated for controls and free speech for a very long time. Back that was not the case in the 1950s, when so many Jews were communists and they were being brought up in these anti-communist committees like McCarthy and people like that. But in recent decades, they have been all for censorship and hate speech laws. And so, you know, given, and that's really been the case, you know, since Trump has gone, the Trump administration, as you were saying before, we've seen all this deplatforming, all this censorship by private companies. But what they really want is the government to do this. They want prison terms. They don't want just people not being able to get bank accounts. And I'm sort of stunned that Henrik and Lana can't get a bank account, a personal bank account. That is absolutely mind-boggling, frankly. I don't know how you can live in this society without a bank account, but that's where we're headed, I guess. But yeah, there's a whole, you know, in these law schools, these law professors have written about the whole legal rationale for curtailing free speech, dealing with the First Amendment. And they really want to do that. Of course, they're very unhappy about the structure of the Supreme Court. That's why there's all this talk about packing the court. I think some of the markers will be, you know, the fact is that the Trump administration has radicalized the left. Maybe we would have been better. Things would have been slower if Jeb Bush had gotten in there or something. But the fact that Trump got in energized the left and made them more radical, more angry, and more determined that this could never happen again. And so they pulled out all the stops, including, I think, you know, the fraud in the election process. So, and they got what they wanted. But, you know, given what happened last week, they're calling it an insurrection, you know, and I just saw the ADL Twitter feed today, yesterday, calling it an insurrection. That's your sort of the official word for it now. And when you have an insurrection, well, you can justify doing just about anything. And so, yeah, they would want to put us not just out of business, but behind bars. They want to really clamp down. I mean, and it really recalls, you know, the big long picture here is that the Jewish influence has opened the gates for immigration. And this has in turn changed the political culture of the society. I mean, California first, and of course, New York always, but then now we have Georgia, and Texas will be soon. So they want permanent hegemony by bringing these people in. And the fact of the matter is that when I was in the 60s, growing up in my 20s, I felt that I was a liberal because, you know, I love, you know, I want a fairer society and all that, but and it was becoming a fairer society. But I did not envision a society in which white people would be a minority and a persecuted, hated minority where, you know, just think about the Biden administration, whites are way underrepresented in his administration, in the top post, and especially white males. So we are under the gun here, and it's pretty clear where they want to go. They want to go all the way as far as they can. And, you know, their ideal society was the Soviet Union, say, between 1918 and 1935 or so, 40, when they held all the top positions. They had a secret police. They didn't have any courts at all. There was no free speech. There was extreme laws against anti-Semitism. And that's where we're headed, I think. Yeah, where they don't want an open society. They don't want free speech. They don't want the sort of enlightenment values that this country were built on. So all our institutions are going to be under threat. They really want to gut the historical American nation.
Well, I think the Biden presidency has obviously got off to the kind of start that many of us thought that it would. And I think we know what the next step is going to be. And I think Biden's next step, were just actually, I'm going to talk about this in a second, but you actually appeared on Frody Midyord's stream just after I did on New Year's Eve. And I was giving my predictions about coronavirus, and you said some things that were very similar to what I was saying. Now, here in the UK today, we have just been told, it was front page of the Daily Mail this morning, and I'll just read the headline to you. Boris Johnson targets Good Friday as earliest date for gradual easing of COVID lockdown. So Good Friday this year in Britain is the 2nd of April. Now, that is quite telling, isn't it? Because we went into lockdown at the end of March last year on the basis that we needed 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Now, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And by the time we get to when they want to start easing lockdown, it'll be 52 weeks and counting to flatten the curve. Now, my belief is one of the first things that Biden and his inner circle will insist on is massive COVID or coronavirus legislation being pushed through, the forced wearing of masks, health passports, similar to what we're getting in Britain. I think part of their plan will immediately be the massive seizing of powers and liberties under the guise of helping people and saving lives. What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
I do think that the coronavirus, the reality of it has been such a boon to the Democrats. There's no way that Biden would have won this election had this virus not appeared. Trump is doing very well. The economy is doing very well. They kept going after him and not getting anything. But this virus really, really killed him. I think that's exactly right, that we're going to have forced vaccinations. We're going to have mandatory mask wearing. Even in public, out in public, in fresh air, uncrowded spaces, they want you to do this. And it's really psychologically, I think it puts you in this mindset of, you can't do things that you used to be able to do. And so I don't think people are socializing. Well, obviously they're not socializing as much as they were, but you sort of get out of practice. You don't maintain contacts with your friends, and everybody's kind of isolated. And I really feel sorry for people that are alone in this situation. My brother's like that. I mean, he's going crazy. I mean, he just can't deal with it anymore. They want, it's part of this sort of top-down control that they want. That's their ideal society, is where people really are under the thumb of the state. And so you may have, health passports. So you won't be able to travel without it. And it wouldn't be surprising if you won't be able to have bank accounts or credit cards or anything like that. It's heading in that direction. And it's so amazing. The Western culture is the culture of individual freedom. We are the individualists, and we're the only people in the world that invented individualism at the institutional level and really pushed the idea of individual freedom and rights And we're seeing them taken away right now. It's the end of our civilization if this happens. And yet we see an awful lot of white people who are, you know, genetically inclined. They're just like us, basically, but they are just knuckling under to this. And yeah, part of it is this moral fervor that swept the nation, this moral panic. And certainly Biden is tapping into that, talking about white supremacy as the big issue is white supremacy. And so we have to tackle that. And conflating Trump voters with white supremacists, which is ludicrous. Do we really think there's 75 million Trump supporter white supremacists in this country? It's ridiculous. But that's what it's being fed. It's what's feeding on. And those conflations are routine now. So going forward, I think that's what they want. They want more and more control. I'm going to see things proposed in Congress that restrict freedom of speech and do the things like the health mandates. I will say that there's a small glimmer of hope that some of the Democrat senators are really not the kind of liberal radicals that we think of with, you know, Warnock or Elizabeth Warren, people like that, or Alexandria Cortez. I mean, you know, like this guy Manchin from West Virginia, and there's a senator from Montana. These guys are not radical. They couldn't be radical coming from West Virginia. There'll be an enormous amount of pressure on them, but Manchin's already said he will not vote for the filibuster, which would mean it would lose. They were going to try to get rid of the filibuster, which would make it much easier to pass legislation. They could just get a majority vote. Kamala Harris is the deciding vote. All this stuff would go through really fast. But if they had the filibuster in there, Republicans could stop this legislation. They need 60 votes. And a lot of this stuff would not pass. That, to me, is a little bit of hope that this administration can't be as radical as it wants to be. Let's see.
I have a question for you, Kevin, and that is, I wonder if you could compare for us for example, the news we have from Biden's choice for, what is it, the Department of Defense, and it's this Lloyd Austin, this non-white guy, who said he wants to, and plans to, rid the military, so purge the military ranks of what we know to be white people who aren't anti-white, and what they will call the anti-white slurs, racist and extremist. This was a quote from this this guy today, Lloyd Austin. So it's, quote, rid the military ranks of racist and extremist, close quote. That's not going to include Muslim, I'm sure. It's just going to be folks like us. But I wonder if you could speak to that vis-a-vis a comparison with Donald Trump and his last-minute pardons and commutations of rapper a lot of people of a particular little group. Sometimes on YouTube, they refer to as puppies, because of all of their power around the world, since they're so powerless. But you see a lot of these people. You see a lot of fraudsters. You see a lot of drug offenders. You did see Steve Bannon, but Lil Wayne and these sorts of characters. This is Trump on his way out of office, his last act, pardons, commutations of sentences, and then Biden's Department of Defense pick, Austin, saying, quote, rid the military ranks of racists and extremists. And what can this maybe tell us about what we just went through in the past 4 years and what we're going to go through in the next 4 years?
Perhaps, I don't know, but these things with these rappers, I mean, there's several. And the guy, the mayor of Detroit, he was a total crook and used his office to fuel his drug trades and everything. Just a really bad apple. So he commuted his sentence, and all these Jewish white collar criminals, including the guy who sponsored Jonathan Pollard, you know, spy in the United States. And of course, he allowed Pollard to go back to Israel, got him out of jail and let him go back to Israel where he got his warm welcome. And, you know, he's this patriot of Israel. And somehow that doesn't, you know, he was greeted by Netanyahu. Somehow this doesn't register in America, you know, who's really running this country, you know? But, yeah, I think these guys, the black guy that's at the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, this has been a target of the ADL for a long time. They were the ones that got the policy in where recruits had to strip naked so they could see if they had tattoos that indicated they were white nationalists. And they reiterated that just recently, but that's been going on. And so anybody, you know, who really is a white nationalist is going to have to keep a very low profile in the military. And a lot of those kind of guys really are attracted to the military. They like the military. But, you know, that is seen, of course, as one of the big power centers in America. And it's probably the last one of the last ones. That the police departments at the local level, I think, are seen as the sort of last vestiges of white power. And so they're going to very, you know, you see all this defund the police stuff. That's really what it's all about, that they want to rein in the police, make the police super politically correct, make them not be able to have any white advocate kind of ideas. And the same in the military, because that you know, that's scary. I mean, military could, and people were talking about that there'd be some kind of military coup. I knew that was ridiculous. The people at the top have been vetted for a very long time, and they have to. They're almost like college presidents, where you have to really show your diversity stripes to be promoted to the rank of a general or something like that. That really is critical. But at the lower levels and the officer corps, still disproportionately white men, and I think that's another thing that they're going to really try to get rid of fast.
And I have a follow-up quickly, brother, that this is something that just vexes me to no end. And when I was a child, I literally a child in elementary school, I can't remember whether it was fifth or sixth grade, but I came to a conclusion that I still have today. So it's either saying something really good or really bad about me, however you, I mean, I guess it depends on how you felt about me before I made the statement. But the thing is that bothers me is this, we see it in conservatism. Quite a bit. We see it in the ranks of what we would refer to as good patriotic people. And that is that this demand that if you find yourself in a corrupt system, that you resign, that you walk away. And in fact, just the other night, we had the one and only Tucker Carlson, who even when he's on a basketball court, it doesn't even have a single ball. And he said that why aren't there slews of resignations from the military? And you just answered that for that, what you just said there, this extreme vetting at the top, but he demanding this slew of resignations from as this sort of knee-jerk response for conservatives, from people from educational institutions, of course corporate entities, the military, I have always thought was the dumbest thing that we could do. Right. In light of the aggression exercised against us, to surrender the power that we hold rather than staying as long as we can with the power that we hold and doing as much good as we can to fight the system. So is this demand that we resign, is this something that has been sewn in to our societal tapestry by way of news and entertainment directed specifically to patriotic Westmen across the Western world, that if you are confronted with evil in your midst, that just like the hero in this movie, or just like the morally right person in this TV show, you will resign and walk away and forgo the power, abstain from participation in that system. Could this have been something that is in us now as this knee-jerk reaction, because it was sown into by way of the media by people who intended harm for us, and that it has indeed played a great part in disarming us and putting us into an environment where we hold very little power and control over our destiny? I give you the floor, brother.
Well, again, I agree with Tucker Carlson. He's been disappointing, to say the least, especially in the last couple of months. I would say, yeah, you should stay in the military as a white male and do what you can under the radar now, because you will be drummed out if you show any sign. I mean, it's sort of like being I've often got emails from people who say, you know, I'd really like to get a PhD in history or something like that. Do you think it's a good idea? And I say, well, if you do that, you're going to have to be a secret agent for a long time. The entire graduate schools, four or five, whatever that is, and then before you get tenure, and then if you come out after you get tenure, you know, 10 years later, they're going to ostracize you. You won't get any grants. Your professional life will go to hell. You won't get invited to any parties. That's your life, you know? You really want to do that. So, you know, that's the way it is. But the reality is if a lot of military guys resign, they'd be happy, you know. Goodbye, and we'll recruit some other people. That would be exactly what would happen. On the other hand, you know, certainly resignation has been powerfully used to, you know, the fact is they had the media, and resignation has been used against, say, the Trump administration, because you've had some high profile resignations of people who were fed up with some aspect of Trump or Trumpism. This guy Scaramucci comes to mind, and he became a real Trump hater afterwards. But there have been a bunch of them, and you see people on their Twitter profiles, you know, recovering Republican who worked in the Trump administration and saw how evil it was or something. You know, that's the kind of person, and the media will love that, and you'll have your 15 minutes of fame if you do it. And probably a good career. And it was remarkable how certain people were resigning right before the end of the Trump administration, because they wanted to have a good career afterwards. Bill Barr, for example, and I think he wanted to solidify his place in the Washington establishment. You know, he saw Trump was going under. Gonna get out. Same, Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, did the same thing, and I think there were a couple of others right before the end. And Betsy DeVos was another one. So yeah, they were bailing out, and it's their own career that they're thinking about there. But oh well, that's the way it is.
I thought with Trump, I'm not obviously into anybody sort of bailing out on their friends. I've been doing this a long time. Kevin's been doing it a long time. Jason's been doing this a long time. I know I've been doing this for two decades now, over two decades this year. And that's a long time to be involved. And I don't bail out on my friends, and I don't expect my friends to bail out on me. And I'm not saying anyone should bail out on their friends. But one thing I will say is I have a certain degree of understanding for those who bailed out on Trump. And that's because Trump was so quick to sacrifice so many of his friends. And one thing I always noticed with Trump is he was much more likely to throw a friend under the bus to please an enemy than he was to attack an enemy to please or save a friend. And that's a major personality flaw with Trump. And I can see why some people might be slightly more forgiven for jumping ship on Trump, because he has done some pretty stupid things. Now, one thing I'll have to add to this, I was appalled to see that he was letting people like Little Wayne and this cocaine dealing black record label owner, giving them pardons. I don't know why he's done that, because he didn't pardon Julian Assange. And the other day when he was asked about WikiLeaks, he lied. He said he didn't know what WikiLeaks was. He didn't have any information on it. And this is over on Devon Stack's Devon Stack Blackpilled, an amazing Telegram channel. He really deserves all the love he's getting right now. But he put up an excellent video. It was a collection of clips from Donald Trump. And the first clip is Donald Trump saying he doesn't know what WikiLeaks is. He can't comment on WikiLeaks. And then it's a collection of all the times he's thanked WikiLeaks or read things out from WikiLeaks or mentioned it publicly at one of his rallies. And that's the kind of reason that when people have bailed on Trump. I understand, because he shows no loyalty to his men. So why would his men really show any loyalty to him?
Yeah, that is very sad they didn't pardon Assange or Snowden. I heard, by the way, you know, Tucker Carlson was mentioning, though, that McConnell threatened Trump, saying that if he pardoned Assange, that he would, that these Republicans would look for impeachment, because they're going to have a trial soon. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. McConnell just completely jumped ship, and they want to get past Trump now. But I don't know. Trump, Trump's a tough customer. He may come back. We'll see.
Well, talking of Trump coming back, he has already said that he is starting a party. He said he's starting what he's going to call the Patriot Party. He should have been on the phone to me. Patriotic Alternative, far better name. I would have licensed it to him for a cool £500 million in untraceable crypto. Donald, I know you're watching. I know you're a big fan of PWR. If you're watching, please stop being so stingy with the donate button. I know that you want to entropy me at least $1 million right now. Don't mind if it's on entropy. Don't mind if it's on Bitcoin, mate, but I will license you Patriotic Alternative for use in America for the princely sum of $500 million. But yeah, he's starting the Patriot Party. What do you think? You see, I like to see the positives in everything. There's always positives, there's always negatives. For example, the negative of Jeremy Corbyn is he's a completely anti-white, insane, progressive, liberal loon. So that's the negative of Jeremy Corbyn. The positive of Jeremy Corbyn is he mentions Zionist power and the way Israel mistreats Palestinians. So there's, you can see goods and bads in lots of different things. And being in politics means you have to find the silver lining to the cloud. Being in politics means it's your job, essentially, as somebody that people look to as a commentator and as an authority figure, to find positives. And one of the things about Donald Trump that could turn out to be the biggest positive of him as a person is that he could, if he starts this third party with all the support he's got, the massive support base he's got, there is the chance that he could actually do something that nobody's ever done before. And that is deal a death blow to the GOP. Do you think that's a do you think that's possible? And do you think that would be positive?
Well, I think he would. If he does do a party, it would deal a death blow to the GOP, and it does deserve to die, as many people have said. I mean, they have given in to this whole thing. You know, they've been gung-ho for immigration and basically gone along with every liberal thing in the long run. So, yeah, it'd be a welcome death. It's very much like Teddy Roosevelt in 1912. You know, he had been president, and then he said he wouldn't run again. Then he did run again. And of course, it broke up the Republican Party for that next election. And that's just why Woodrow Wilson got in. But it would probably destroy the Republican Party. The good news is that, you know, if he really ran a populist campaign, he would have a lot more votes than some mainstream Republican. Someone said that Ben Sasse might run. Well, Ben Sasse is this liberal senator from Nebraska and Republican, but you know, it's like one of these guys. That Republican Party is already dead. I don't think it can come back. See what happens here, but it looks like, I don't know, the positive thing could be the rise of a real populist party, but given all of Trump's negatives, it's almost hard to see that, you know. He was not consistently positive, and there was so much that his rhetoric was great in a lot of ways. I mean, I was very enthusiastic in 2016. His immigration program, no more wars, the trade imbalances and all that, those things seemed exactly right. But then once he got in office, and you can't blame him entirely because the Democrats were just going after tooth and nail the entire 4 years. But you know, he made an awful lot of mistakes, and a lot of them were his appointments. And now his pardons are just nutty. It's crazy that he would do those guys and not these other people who are very, very deserving. But again, I think it's his own self-preservation. He's very worried about impeachment. And the Republican Party could get rid of him. And that's what they may want to do. But if they do that, then they would preclude him from running again for any federal office. And that would be the death blow to Donald Trump. And maybe that's what they want. They want to bury this guy, put a stake through his heart. And that's what they're aiming at.
Well, I think they may impeach him, or they may take legal action against him, even when he isn't president, simply just to stop him standing again. I think for all that you can say negative about Trump, and there are a lot of negative things you can say about him, especially his love for a certain Middle Eastern nation. I mean, let's face it, if that Middle Eastern nation did have a rear end, Trump would have had his face buried in that Middle Eastern nation's rear end, and he would have loved every minute of it. I mean, he did not stop kissing Israel behind for his entire presidency, and that was quite galling. But despite all of that, they do fear him. I have never seen such hatred from those in the media directed at any other president or mainstream candidate ever before. No. And I think that tells you something about the fact that they do fear him. And I don't believe there was a master plan. I don't believe any of that Q nonsense. I'm making a video about Q and how I don't agree with any of it. But I do think the powers that be and the media hated him. He wasn't some political Jesus, some political Messiah, but the media did crucify him as if he was.
He sure did. And you know, in 2016, I wrote a bunch of articles, and you know, looking at how the media was handling that, and they were comparing him to Hitler all the time. And the reason was he was making these statements about immigration. You know, Paris isn't Paris anymore. And Mexico isn't sending their best, that sort of thing. Those are the things that just absolutely put the people that run this country into a meltdown. I mean, this could not happen. And it did happen. He got in. Well, but the hate continued. And it's amazing to see this. I mean, I know people on Twitter, they weeped. They wept when he got in, and ever since then, all 4 years, just putting him down. Melania, Ivanka, Jared, and all, I mean, everything, every McConnell, every Republican, just going, this hate just oozing out of them. And now that Trump's out of there, see what happens with these people. We talked about Trump derangement syndrome, but it was real. It was just it was unlike anything that anyone has ever seen in American politics. The absolute hatred by such, you know, and I didn't see that, you know, I don't see that on the right. I don't see, certainly nobody hates Biden. How can you hate Biden? The guy's incompetent, senile. He has no real beliefs of anything, I don't think. He just sort of, well, this is what, you know, I can... he's going to do because these people want him to do it. I don't think he has any beliefs or ideology at all. He's just a blank slate. And now he is senile. He can't keep three sentences together without a teleprompter. And even then, it's kind of difficult sometimes. And a lot of people, and myself included, think that he is corrupt. His son, Hunter, has done these very corrupt deals. And Jill's got a cut out of it, I think. And they may try to impeach him because they'd love to have Kamala Harris be president. That would be their dream. Nobody really wanted Biden, but he was the sort of person who they thought, well, he's got this moderate image. We can get him in there. But the hatred is just unbelievable. It's not going to stop. These people are continuing that. And now that Trump's not going to even have any platforms anymore. He's off Twitter, and they're not going to cover him like they used to. So I'll be interested to see. They'll find ways to hate. I think it's a personality disorder at this point. They're just haters. And all the haters just came out for 4 years, and now they'll find ways to hate Trump until he's dead or even beyond that.
I think you made a really interesting point. I know Jason's got one more quick question before we go to the Super Chats, but you made a really interesting point about the Biden presidency. You have to remember that every single one of the Democratic nominees were all very unpopular in their own way. None of them had what it took to take on Trump. And every single one, especially the most popular, were in fact people who would have alienated a massive chunk, and that most popular being Bernie Sanders, a massive chunk of the Democrat support base. There was going to be a zero chance of any of them actually getting elected as president. And with somebody like Bernie, you would have had a huge problem because many, many big Democrat supporters wouldn't have got on board with many of his programs. So they had to pick Biden. I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. Biden isn't really a man. Biden is a blank slate. He's somebody that he was there in the Obama times. People remember Obama and his era as being an era that was generally quite good for America, a time of wealth, a time of prosperity, a time when the media weren't constantly attacking the man in charge. And it was a time when there wasn't this kind of strife and conflict. And because he was involved in that, and because he is such a blank slate, they picked him and they can just inject whatever personality they want into him. But I'm not sure how long he'll last. I don't think he's going to last his whole term. And if he does, he will last it as a puppet and a puppet alone. Sorry, Jason, I'll let you carry on with your question now, my friend.
No, that's brilliant. I agree that I really think Kevin hit the nail directly on the head, drove it clean through the sheetrock and out the other side. Biden was the candidate for the Democrat Party that offended the least number of Democrat supporters, of these anti-whites who call themselves Democrats and various other titles. And then they ended up going with him as a consequence, knowing, of course, that they could control everything that he wanted to do. Now, when it comes to, and this is kind of how I'm going to frame my question of you, Kevin, when it comes to, and I'll make a bit of a prediction too, I think, just sort of like an off-the-cuff one, and we'll see what happens in 4 years. But there were a lot of real power holders in the Democrat Party who did not like Kamala. Now, they're ideologically, of course, and a lot of voters, Democrat voters, of course, love Kamala. They'd love to see this non-white and female president. But a lot of the power holders did not like her. And there were quite a lot of articles, negative articles about her when they had that, how many did they have? Like 35 people running for the nomination. Just can you imagine the future of this country and that party in particular? But my question is, in 4 years, let's say that Biden is able to hold off full-fledged rigor mortis status, and he's able to make it through 4 years. Is it possible? And this is the question that is part of a prediction. Is it possible that he, not unlikely, of course, to run for another 4 years? Is it possible that rather than have Kamala, who is the vice president, would be the presumptive nominee for president, is it possible to see Hillary Clinton, with the great power of the Clintons, reemerge as a potential contender for the nomination of president? We know they continue to retain their great power. We know that she wanted to be the president badly. And so with the Clintons, with their great connections and power, and when you disagree with them, you often seem to end up dead. Could it be possible that we see a reemergence of Hillary Clinton in 4 years, and then potentially her taking the helm of the Democrat Party? And I'll just tack this on with this question. Trump really reminds me of Ted Turner. And do you remember when Turner was anti-white? And he made that clear in his politics on a regular basis. But he did make that movie where he was far more favorable to the South than anybody had ever been about the war for Southern independence. And he did every now and again. He was kind of like a loose gun. You didn't really know what was going to come out of him. He might go a direction you don't like if you're an anti-white, even though he was generally anti-white. Trump seemed to me to be kind of the same thing. Maybe a little bit, maybe a little less wild than Ted Turner, but Ted Turner built CNN, and he was the creator of the all-day long news network, and it had not been done until he did it. They took that from him. They disempowered him eventually. They took as much as they could from him. We see Trump come in, wild guy, made a lot of promises that made people excited and voted for him. But then we saw a lot of appeasement. I mean, he couldn't even throw the CNN reporter out of the news pool in the White House when he was first there, if you remember those in the first days of his presidency. So is it possible that Kamala could be added to the likes of these two gentlemen? That even though she's anti-white, the things they don't like about her is this headstrong, this willfulness, this potential to maybe do something that they don't expect and to upset them and to unsettle what they're trying to accomplish with their anti-white objectives. And again, back to that, the first part of the question, might we see Hillary Clinton and the powerful Clinton dynasty return in 4 years to claim the helm of the Democrat Party?
It is possible. Kamala Harris really had no popular appeal. I mean, she was getting 1%. In those primary elections. And I don't think she's a likable kind of person. But yeah, she has these identity qualifications. She's not white. She's a woman and all that. Hillary, she's 73 years old now. She'd be 77 to start her next term. But I guess that's about how old Biden is now. So it could happen. I can imagine challenges to Kamala Harris in 2024 that may well happen. And conceivably to Hillary, she still thinks she should have won. And just yesterday, she had this idea that Putin was on the phone with Trump when there were those assaults on the Capitol and crazy stuff. I mean, that's just like tinfoil hat, weirdo stuff. But she's really held, kept that flame alive that the election was stolen from her, that this was, of course, her saying that is never a problem with the media, but Trump says it. It's like the worst thing in the world. But I don't know. The problem is that what the Democrats are going to do and do their best to do is to make sure they have a lot more Democrat voters next time around. And they want amnesty, of course, but apparently they won't become citizens until after 4 years. But they'll still, and they'll also make this voting regime, the mail-in voting, which I think really was prone to fraud. They'll make that standard throughout the country, and that will enable them to hold on to their power. So, I'm very concerned about a permanent Democrat hegemony, that is what's in the cards. But I don't think, the fact is Hillary's an unattractive person. Neither is Kamala. None of them were, really. Elizabeth Warren is very smart. I always thought, that she'd be a tough person to debate, She really would. She's very intelligent, but shrill. And I don't think anybody really liked her. I hear her during the primary season, and she'd be talking, and it's like, do you really want to hear this woman screaming at you for 4 years? My God, just be horrible. But Hillary, all her corruption, there is a Clinton sort of mafia out there, and they're tough people. I don't know. These guys are playing for keeps. And people said this, that the Republicans play for, you know, they want a career or something. That whereas the Democrats are playing for keeps. It's like Armageddon, Gulag kind of mentality that they have. You know, scorched earth, get rid of them. And that's their mentality. And, well, maybe that's what you have in politics. We haven't had that before. There's been a sort of bipartisan kind of cooperation and stuff. But the polarization is so extreme, so extreme. And the Democrats' answer is just suppression and import more voters, and we'll win all the time. And that's what they're going to want to do. And they're suppressing. They're very worried about the military, but that's what they're going to really focus on that. Get rid of anybody who's remotely got white advocate kind of ideas.
Well, I completely agree. I think they'll root out anybody who is even remotely patriotic. And the fact that Trump is throwing around a word like patriot, the Patriot Party, I should imagine that just like in the UK, because we're having exactly the same thing here in the UK, military bases, barracks, etc., have posters around saying if you hear people, you know, saying that they're patriots, if you hear people saying they're nationalistic, if you hear people talking about issues like this, report them because they are a threat to national safety. But we do have some super chats tonight. I've just got to inform the chat again. We do have nearly 1,900 people watching here tonight on DLive. Unfortunately, people cannot sub or give lemons on this stream because it is X-tagged. I have just enabled my Streamlabs OBS so I can stream to DLive now and YouTube when we do movie streams or gaming streams, so we can still do non-X tagged content here at times. But if you wish to donate to this show, if you want to support this show, if you want to see this show continue in its form and you like it, you can donate via Entropy. And that is very, very, I'm very, very grateful for anyone who does that. I'm just putting the link in the chat now. So thank you for being here. I'm sorry you can't donate. That is not down to me. That is down to DLive. They have changed their terms of service. So any X-tagged or political content cannot receive donations. So they have done that, not me. But you can donate via Entropy, and the Entropy link is on my Telegram, it's on my Gab, and it is now in the chat here, the live chat here tonight, if you would like to make a donation. So I'm going to go through some of these donations that have arrived already. Bailiff Basher gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, "Evening, Mark. You have debated Anne-Marie Waters, Ghazi Kodzo, to name a few. Who is next up for an online thrashing?" Well, Anne-Marie Waters has not debated me. She will not debate me. She ran away scared. She made comments about me. She made a stupid video about me, which caused loads of her members to jump ship and support PA instead. But she won't debate me. I would love to debate her, Tommy Robinson, or Alex Jones. They would be the ones to debate. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much, Serena. Lovely to see you here tonight. She says, "Do you think any of the Q fans will look to people like us for solutions, or do you think they're too stuck in the ZOG paradigm? I actually do feel sorry for them. I think they're desperately looking for a savior when there isn't one." Great guest. Well, it is a great guest. And Kevin, do you think any of these people might come over to us? Is there a way for us to reach out to them?
Well, people have suggested that the good news about all this is that more people are aware of the situation, and they are looking for political alternatives, and they may be more open to us. But of course, you know, we are so restricted. As I interpret you right, you're saying that this program is X-rated on meaning that they can't get contributions, is that right, or something?
Yeah, any political content on DLive has to be X-rated, and anything that's X-rated means you can't take any form of donation through DLive or take any new subscribers during that. So they're really hammering down on us. I've already had my business bank account closed. I've had my PayPal closed. They are slowly closing the noose around our necks when it comes to financial contributions. And I know that you've suffered too because your excellent book is no longer on Amazon.
Yes, it's been banned. Also, separation of discontents, culture critique have been banned. But the publisher still prints them, and it's available at Barnes & Noble. So it hasn't been exactly the end of the world. This is the big, you know, we talk about election fraud, but the big story of election manipulation was the media, the social media, you know, for example, Google biasing searches and then completely suppressing the Hunter Biden scandal and things like that that are just completely skewed towards one candidate. And apart from any indication of violence or anything else, this was a full-court press. And it shows really where they want to go. They want to go back to when I was growing up, and you had three TV channels, and they were all run owned by the same group of people, and they were all spewing the same liberal sort of line about everything. And that's what they want. They want one voice out there, and you have a sort of image, the sort of you have the idea that there's diversity. You got three different stations. You got CNN, and you've got MSNBC, and then you've got Fox. And Fox, I just saw that Chris Douglas came out and said that Biden's speech was the greatest thing he'd ever heard. He's at Fox, for God's sakes. You know, there are all kinds of guys like that. Fox is far less consistently conservative than MSNBC is consistently liberal. And they never have a conservative voice at all. I remember talking to my brothers, who are both very liberal, and I talked about the Hunter Biden thing. Neither of them hadn't heard of it because they don't tune into that media. And that's the thing, you know, that they want that one voice, and that's it. Back to the old days.
Very, very quickly, if I could, just to the Q issue. And by the way, this comment about the speech, it struck me as a speech that had the complexity of a speech that would be delivered by a maybe learning disabled junior high schooler. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. They gave him these very short sentence constructions to read, and then adjectives and then nouns. I mean, it was just, it would just read words. Just it was really ridiculous. So the best thing he's ever heard. Well, that speaks about him. And this, I say,
skewed it totally towards Biden.
Oh yeah, skewed completely toward him, and that has been the case from the very beginning of this whole political campaign. Everything's skewed. They have cried. They have written poetry. These are the people who are claim to be impartial. But let me just quickly say, and connecting directly to what I was just saying, that when we're talking about the Q people, a lot of people are wondering how do we, and you have, by the way, all of these different spheres of activity, all wondering, how can we appeal to the Q people and contemplating how to do so. So this is going to be a pool of individuals, however large or small they actually are, that are fought over. I want you all, just for a moment, and then we get right back to these questions, just to think about this, that what people are buying tells you more about the purchaser than the seller. So in business, if you have, it's like you can think of this in a really easy way, that how difficult would it be to sell a snow cone machine or, you know, iced water to Eskimos? Well, it would be beyond difficult because they don't need those things. It's cold where they are. They don't need more cold. They would need warmth. So the fact that Q people were buying an excuse to do nothing tells you that these people are not necessarily going to be the kind of folks that you want or need in the activities that we actually have to engage in to recapture our destiny. What will they buy? We know that they'll buy an excuse to do nothing. So if you really want to appeal to them, give them another excuse to do nothing. Your challenge, though, you're putting before yourself, I think, is this. How do we make the Q people into active participants of service to white well-being, of the recapture of our destiny, the recapture of our governments, etc.? That is a much higher bar to try to cross than how do you just bring them over to the work that we're doing. But I'll pass it back.
Well, I think bringing the Q people over is difficult, but I'm doing an entire video on that on Friday, and I think three things need to be done. Firstly, we need to be truthful with them about who's behind this. Secondly, we need to be truthful about what the real goal of these people is, which is demographic replacement of our people. And finally, we need to tell these people that if we as a group are going to win, we can't sit around on our bums, on our sofas, waiting for people to come and save us on some on a big white horse. There's no savior coming on a big white horse. The military aren't stepping in. If we're going to save the West, we are the ones that have to do it. If we're going to be saved, we have to save ourselves. We have to form a community, and we have to fight for political power, just like any other group does. And the problem with Q is Q has robbed people of the ability to do that. But I've got an entire video coming out on that on Friday. So Serena, thank you so much for the super chat, and I hope you enjoy the video. Let's go into some more of those. Stanley Sloggett gave £10. Thank you very much, Stanley. And he said, question for Kevin. What stance will Biden take on Iran? Will it benefit Israel?
Well, we can be sure that he's not going to do anything that really endangers Israel. But the fact is that Israel did not like the Iran deal that the Obama administration came up with. And they pressured Trump to get rid of it, and he was obedient. And now they're making sounds about going back in. But, you know, you look at the foreign policy, national security team, and it's just rife with very strong Jews. People who are very attached to Israel, they've made sounds about going back into the Iran deal, but it's almost hard to believe it'd be the same Iran deal. These people are very gung-ho Israel patriots, and they will probably get what they want there, and it's certainly not going to. You know, I think Israel is hyper sort of paranoid, shall we say, or hyper aggressive is probably a better word. They want Iran to be just bombed into the Stone Age. Sheldon Adelson said that, that's really what they would like. They would like to have a nuclear United States go in there and just level the place, and because it's too big to send land troops into, they want to bomb them. And into submission. I just don't know. You can be sure that they're going to take a very hostile stance towards Russia. I mean, Victoria Nuland was the sort of lead person in Ukraine, where they got the topple of the pro-Soviet, the pro-Russian government, and that motivated Putin to take Crimea, which had been Russian for about 200 years, and was a very understandable thing to do. They want to make Russia into the bad guy, not China, is my impression. And of course, Biden is bought and paid for by China. And so we're going to see a lot of they're going to relax the trade things with China. And China may well have blackmailable material on Biden, and it can really hem him in. About China, but I see confrontation with Russia. I see, you know, more of a military presence in the Middle East, going after the Assad regime. And if they get an Iran deal, it'll be a very, very tough deal that Iran won't want to go into.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next super chat. I agree with everything you said, by the way. Michael's 57DE gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, you can turn on and off the X tag to take lemons while streaming. That's what Horus White Rabbit does. He'll announce in advance, turn off the X tag for a brief time, a few minutes, take lemons, then turn it back on. Well, let's try that. Let's try that for a couple of moments. We will attempt to briefly take lemons now. Let's see if we can manage that. I will have a go at that and see if that works. So we will take take Lemons for a couple of moments now, and then we'll turn it back on in a couple of moments. Although I don't want to get banned on this, so I don't want to risk that too many times. But thank you for the $5 super chat. David Slater gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, keep up the good work, Mark, from the Sheffield boys. Well, thank you so much. Front Wheel Skid gave £25. Thank you very much for the generous super chat. He said, thank you, Kevin, for everything you do. The White Race, or what will eventually remain of us, will forever be indebted to you for all your work, especially the culture of critique. When we win, your stature will reach the clouds. Hail, Kevin. 14 in the chat for Kevin. Oh, Mark and Jason, you're not too bad yourselves. Well, thank you so much for that. Would you like to comment on that, Kevin?
Just, you know, I'd like to thank people for saying things like that. It really makes it worthwhile. I would say I think that just one thought that perhaps should be out there is that I think in America that people are going to realize that the Republican Party can't win an election, whether they're split or not at a national level. Because Democrats are going to ensure their permanent hegemony. And I think at that point, a lot of people who are very mainstream now, not just people who are, you know, prone to white nationalism or something like that, regular kind of Republicans are going to want to secede, and we'll see that, you know, all these red states may want to secede. If you had, you know, look at all the red states, the huge land mass in the middle of the country that's still red and will be that way for quite a while, I see that as hope. That, you know, and that white people are going. I mean, I know white people are going to states like Idaho. They're going to states that are not, you want to get out of Portland. You want to get out of San Francisco. They're leaving New York. I think a lot of these people are basically on our side. They can't stand what's happening in those communities. Now, some of them will take their liberal attitudes with them, but I think a lot of them will not. And you hear stories of people, get me out of Portland, talking to a real estate agent. You know, you got to get me out of here because it's insane here. And the businesses are just gutted. You know, Antifa is just trashing everything with the cooperation of the authorities. So we're entering a period. I think there's going to be a sort of relocation. White people are going to glom into white areas. And we may see when people realize they can't win a national election, then they start to rethink this. I think a lot of conservatives say, well, we can win in 2018. We'll come back. I don't think they can. They're going to set it up so they can't. And when that happens, people are going to get more radical. We'll see.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you very much for the generous super chat. Martin Smith gave $5 and said, just joined, perhaps. This was mentioned already, but I'm really gutted that Trump didn't pardon Assange. That's it. Well, thank you very much, Martin. Thank you for the super chat. We have already discussed that. For Camaraderie gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, evening, Mark, Jason and Kevin. Trump did not pardon Julian Assange. Please give your thoughts on this and anyone else who deserved a pardon but didn't get one and why. Well, we have already commented on this. I said that Trump has been very two-faced about this. You want to watch the video on Devin Stack's Telegram channel. Pretty sickening what Trump has done with this one, but thank you for the super chat. Old Mother Earth gave £3. Thank you so much, and said, do you ever think that the whole thing could be a farce where Trump is just playing a part to get America to the point it is now, a governing body that is at war with all patriots? I don't think this is part of some master plan. I think that Trump is as much of a genius as he is a buffoon, and that sums him up perfectly. And throw in his egotism and self-centered nature and the fact he'll throw his friends under the bus, it's created this absolute maelstrom. So, what do you guys think? Do you guys think this is all part of some plan?
Well, I have talked to people like that, and it's certainly true that the Democrats and the left have become more extreme in the last 4 years. And really into a scorched earth policy now that probably wouldn't have been there if Jeb Bush had been in there, and it'd be sort of gradual, you know, conservative kind of government that doesn't really conserve anything. But I don't think it was his plan to do that, but it has been the effect of it, actually.
I would say never allow yourself to heed any idea that everything that's going on in the world around you at all power levels is a grand play, because then you immediately ostracize yourself from participation. You immediately make yourself a spectator in your own life. And we can't afford that. We need every single person participating. We can get dismayed. We can get depressed during times like this, but we can never lose hope, and we can never surrender our agency to these cloudy, shrouded, shadow covered characters, and allow them to decide what will happen with us and our descendants. We have to take ownership. So, you know, it's verisimilitude when it comes to things. There is no grand play where they're all just playing a part, but there is verisimilitude to this. And even and if you're not familiar with the word, just look it up. Things that are true have to have the ring of truth. They can't just be true. And so even if you had a truth like turtles controlled the world or whatever it might be, if it is so ridiculous and so absurd, and at the same time, what I tack onto the word is the whether or not it will serve the interests of the recapture of our destiny. So if there is an idea, even if it is a truth, if it doesn't have the ring of truth, it's not believable and won't put people into action, won't galvanize them. But also, even if it's true and serves as a consequence to undermine the efforts that we have to encourage people to engage in to recapture our destiny, even if that were the case, you need to push it aside and move forward with what is productive, because we have a responsibility and a duty. We're here today because a lot of our ancestors gave their loves, their love, their dignity, their husbands, their wives, their blood, their sweat, so that we could live in this wonderful Western civilization that's being torn down around us. We owe it to all those who are yet to come, the babies still in the wombs, and those after them, to do our duty, irrespective of what is going on behind the scenes or elsewhere. I pass it back.
Thank you. Flying Dutchman gave $25, very generous, thank you very much. He said, Mark, I must respectfully correct you. The Obama years in America were in fact filled with strife on the streets. The economy was not good. The Trump years before the virus were the best the American economy was in recorded memory. As far as strife, yes, the Marxists, the elite and media always stymied President Trump. Well, thank you very much, Flying Dutchman. Very generous of you. I'll have to make more mistakes if you're going to correct me with a $25 super chat. Thank you so much. Storks gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, Farage's new party has been registered with the Electoral Commission. Any progress with PA's application? Yes, they just rejected it. We're going to discuss that, myself and Laura, next Friday night. But we have been rejected again. But we'll fill you in on why and the ethnicity of the person who rejected us. Can you guess? And finally, Way of the Future gave $5 and said, hello all. I'm curious to know, what does KMAC think about Pat Buchanan's legacy in American politics? Thank you for the super chat.
Pat Buchanan, he's certainly a important, very important figure. I do think that he basically had the same attitudes as Trump did way before Trump came on the scene. And of course, he was buried, never got the Republican nomination. He was vilified. He gave that culture speech, culture war speech, that just totally alienated. And he actually doubted some of the things about the Holocaust. My God, that really put him on the map. And marked him for hatred and everything. But I think he said that, I haven't read his recent columns as much as I should, but I think he said that he thought Trumpism would be around for a long time. And I do think that's the case. I think that Trump, the one reason that they feared Trump so much was his charisma, and that he was able to get quote, huge crowds and entertain them and make them just, you know, enthusiastic. God, I wish I could talk that way. You know, it'd be really something. But he really had an incredible talent. And I think that's partly what they feared, that this demagogue could come and just sway these people. and make them vote for him, the demagogue. That's why they tore him down for all that time. He never really accomplished anything. They kept calling him a fascist. What fascism? I'd like to see where that was. But Pat Buchanan's a great American, and he's still putting out a lot of very good material. But again, he really had the same attitudes about everything, foreign policy, trade. He was one of the first guy I ever read about the whole trade issue as a political issue. And of course, he was buried for decades, but he also had the culture thing and immigration, everything before Trump did. And very smart guy. And of course, his World War II was something they did not want to see either, because it really blamed Churchill more than anything else.
Well, thank you very much. That's the end of the Super Chats, and I've just turned off the D-Live lemons again. I'll put them on at the end, 5 minutes at the end. So if you've enjoyed the show there, and obviously you can still donate via Entropy. So if you'd like to make donations, Entropy is the best way, as always. That payment platform is run by people who are very, very friendly towards us, and the wonderful Rachel Constantinidis, whose family runs Entropy. They've just had their first baby, so congratulations, Rachel. Some lovely pictures she put up on Instagram the other day, so it is public knowledge. Congratulations to her and her husband and their beautiful baby daughter. So some good news there. Now, we do have some unpaid questions. Connor Chickmeister said, will we see further demonstrations, protests by fellow patriots in America as a result of the unprecedented anti-white tyranny that will undoubtedly be inflicted under Biden and Harris? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to throw this out to Kevin and obviously to Jason as well, but I think the Trump protest movement is probably pretty much over. I think the response by the government, the FBI rounding people up, the unprecedented media coverage and naming and shaming of people involved in the Capitol protests will have scared a lot of people off. What do you guys think? Kevin, do you think these protests will continue, or do you think that's it for them?
I'd like to see protests continue, but yeah, I think you're right what happened in the wake of the Capitol protests is probably intimidating to a lot of people. But I wouldn't be surprised if Trump, as part of his plan for coming back, and I do think we'll see more of Trump. I think he will have some rallies, and he will solicit donations and keep his political options open, and they will be well attended, but they won't be like the Antifa that basically spent the last 4 years destroying things with the approval of the powers that be, especially in the last year. So if they're peaceful, I think that would be the key. And you know, Trump did not want violence. He said that in his speech. But of course, the media and Tucker Carlson and McConnell, and they were all blaming him. That they were saying it's partly on Trump. And I never could quite get the logic of that. But they will continue to do that to the extent that they can. And so those rallies would be something that double agents would want to infiltrate and start doing violent things in Trump's name and have the same thing happen all over again. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. By the way, we have people in the audience saying that they love you, Kevin. So that's I agree. Trump is going to get out. He's going to have more rallies because it's energetic. He loves it. He dances at them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he's going to be out there. He's going to be having rallies, and people will be showing up. They will be law-abiding. The kinds of opposition, I think, perhaps that the person was wondering is going to manifest, materialize, is something akin to the anti-whites objecting to Trump and you know, setting things on fire. And Kevin said, we're not going to see that. And I agree completely. There's not going to be 4 years of people in the streets and attacking Starbucks trash cans. houses of records and pulling down statues on the conservative side, the Republican side.
I think, you know, just to your point about how much Trump enjoyed that process, you know, his last campaign, the last big speech he made was in Georgia, and he talked for an hour and a half. And I think he just didn't want to let it go. He loves being at the center of attention, having 25,000 people cheering and just loving him, and then going off the stage with that YMCA and doing his thing. You know, I mean, that's just, he just loves that stuff, and who can blame him? I mean, it's an amazing thing.
I can see Trump continuing to hold large rallies, and I can certainly see him continuing to hold sold-out rallies where he'll be allowed to hold them. You see, Trump's going to face a number of problems now. If he continues to hold sort of protests like the Capitol Hill protest, he will be shut down. And he might even struggle to hold traditional-style rallies because, as president, he was probably allowed to use certain venues. Will he still be allowed to actually hold these huge rallies? Will anyone actually host them?
Well, I imagine there'd be places in red states that would welcome that. I'm not sure of that, but I think it would happen. But Trump has a whole lot of problems, legal problems, now that he's a private citizen. There's this woman, a Jewish woman named Kaplan, who's leading the charge, and she's got all these lawsuits waiting to go now. She's the same woman who prosecuted the Charlottesville protesters, and not prosecuted them, but, you know, sued them and for like $1 million. Completely bogus, by the way, but you know how the courts are. And he's got those kind of lawsuits, the state attorney in New York. He's going to be inundated, but I do think he will. I think there'll be places, there'll be venues that allow him to do this. It would be a remarkable infringement on free speech if that was not the case.
Well, you see, here in the UK, people being able to get venues is something that is a regular problem. Groups being able to actually hold events is a problem. I mean, when we hold events, you know, we have to be rather secretive about it. You know yourself, traveling around Europe to speak at different meetings, how secretive groups have to be. And I've got to be honest, I think people would put real pressure now on any venue that allowed Donald Trump to hold meetings. I don't know. I can see them saying, well, he's a hate figure. I can see serious legislation being put in place. You know, they're saying that Pepe the Frog is a hate symbol. When is MAGA going to be a hate phrase or a hate word or a banned word? Or when will wearing a MAGA cap in certain places be considered a hate offense? I don't know. I'm just throwing this out there, but I can see this happening. I can see more pressure being added to him.
Yeah. Well, one thing, you know, Jared Taylor was, his venues kept getting shut down. So he ended up going to these national parks where they really can't keep you out. And maybe that's what Trump would have to do, but I don't know. I still think there's a lot of mainstream people that want to see Trump, and I think it would be, there'd be some venues in a lot of places, red states, that would welcome him. But they, you know, there may be other venues would demand huge insurance payments and things like that. Europe is shut down pretty much. And I, as you say, I've been to Europe a few times, and it's sort of like, you have to keep the place of the meeting secret, and you meet in a certain place, and then you walk to there, you know, and it's like you're a secret agent for a while. And it's just, you feel very, very paranoid, like, but you have to be, because they want to get you. Yes, they do.
I think Trump will start to feel that. And I wouldn't be surprised as well if federal agencies such as the FBI or different security services didn't start to put pressure upon venues to refuse him. I think he'll be under a lot of scrutiny, and I wouldn't be completely shocked if they didn't move against him, they didn't file bogus charges against him, and I wouldn't be completely shocked if he didn't end up living his days out in some form of exile. If he ended up living out his days in Russia, it would not shock me. Well, I think they'll go for him.
That would be something. Sadly, it may be the case. I just don't know.
Well, we have another question here from It's Time to Grow and Learn, who asks, is it safe to say that all whites within the West who are like us should start cutting ties with all Western established authorities as enemy hostiles, not in a warfare sense, but in terms of ideology? Well, this is my take. If you can move away from a group that is known to be anti-white, move away from that group. If you can stop buying something from an organization or a service provider which has made anti-white statements, then do that. And if there's any way that you can cost these groups money or make their lives difficult or take something from them, do it. There used to be this feeling amongst many right-thinking people in the West that they shouldn't take anything out of the system unless they needed to, because we have a social conscience. We have this idea of social conscience. So if we haven't put into the pot, we shouldn't take out. And unless we really need to take out of the pot, we shouldn't take out of the pot. We treated the pot, the public purse, as if it was the family gold, as if you only took out of that public purse if you absolutely needed to. My grandparents felt like that. My granddad, he wouldn't go to hospital, he wouldn't go to the doctors unless he absolutely needed to, unless it was sort of life and death. They wouldn't claim anything from the government unless they absolutely needed to, because they didn't want to be seen as taking advantage. And that's really how a socialist mentality is, that if you've got good people in a high IQ, high trust society, you can have that level of socialism. You can have a public purse and people don't abuse it. But we live in a world where that public purse is abused by people who have just got off some boat, who've just paddled ashore in Dover or another southern port town, and are dipping their hands into that pot. So what I say to people, we're at war with this system. This system is paying people who hate us, who are coming here to displace us, to come here and displace and replace us. They're giving them free money. So if that free money is on the table for you, whether it be free money from utility companies, whether it be free money from the train companies, whether it be free money from the government, take it. If there are loopholes that you can exploit, and you can take something from these anti-white organizations, take it. Take all you can. Because believe me, you not taking it will only help them give more to people who hate you. That's how it works. You know, there's always money on the table for every cranky group. I don't know whether you saw, but there was this NHS Trust lecture. The NHS Trust has spent thousands and thousands of pounds putting on lectures on dismantling whiteness. So why should you feel that you shouldn't go in and take some of that money? Why should you feel that you should be fair to a system that when they have got money spare, they spend it on attacking you? I think it is time that we either move away from companies or organizations that hate us, or alternatively, we take every last penny we can from them. So if something comes through your door saying, would you like a 3 months gas and electric because of coronavirus hardship? Well, don't be thinking, well, I don't really need it. Take it, because they'll give it to every immigrant going. This is how we beat the system. We have to be as ruthless and self-centered as every other ethnic group. And that means taking what's best for us, because if we don't take it, sure as hell, somebody else will. What do you guys think about that?
Go ahead, Jason.
I agree 100%. This is our system. This is what we have been paying into for each other. And it is there for us. It has been fleeced from us for decades, for the totality of all of our lives, really. It has been fleeced, all of this that we have set aside for those of our family, extended family, et cetera, we have paid into, and you should absolutely get from it what you can. It's all the way back, and I tell the story, I believe, in Crucible of when I was in junior high school, and I made the argument that what you have in this country is you have all of these different groups of people in the United States, and I mean, this is holds true for all Western nations. You have all of these different groups of people who are feeding off of, in many different ways, not just by way of welfare systems and opportunities, but grants and loans that are forgiven and all of the affirmative action, all of these anti-white policies, that these business opportunities for non-white peoples, they come with the notion, and I grew up with all of these different groups of people in Northern Virginia, they come with the idea, and it is of the highest morality for them, that they are going to do everything they can to get from this country, to get from this society, which is not to say that there aren't going to be non-white people that are lovely, wonderful people that say, I want to contribute back to the United States, or I want to contribute back to the UK, or I want to, they serve in the military, not just because they would otherwise be homeless, but because they think that it is a service that they owe, as it was the tradition coming down through my family, that freedom isn't free, and somebody from every generation had to go to the military to buy it for the rest of the family. So there are going to be people like that, but the vast majority, I grew up with them, and I mentioned in Crucible that it was like watching the vines, creepers, creep over a strong tree, and eventually it would strangle the tree. Eventually its leaves would take all the light and the tree would die. And I said all the way back in junior high school that if we continue to be the ones to sustain, to work for and contribute and sacrifice for this thing that all of these other people have come to get from, America's the place where you go to get rich. America's the place you go to get laid. America is the place you go to get a boat, to get a mansion, to get it's. This is the mentality, and that's what's broadcast all around the world. This is what you come and get if you are a non-white person. That eventually, that oak, that entity, that country, those countries, those Western countries would die. And so I say that get from this corpse of Western civilization all that you can, so that you can have sound footing on which to advance white well-being and do good for our people while there is still time to do good for our people. Absolutely 100% agreement.
Just before Kevin gives his opinion, I just want to throw this out there. Somebody's put this in the chat, and this is gold. I scan the chat. I'm usually, my eyes are all over the place. I'm looking at the chat. I'm looking at the entropy. I'm fiddling with the settings. And you know, you always see my eyes darting around, and I try and notice little things that go by. And somebody in the chat put up a really, really good point. These people, they get off an airplane, they get off a boat, they go to the NHS, and they say straight away that they've got HIV. And if they've got HIV, they get the antivirals. And these antiviral treatments per year, per person, cost £25,000 a year per person. So if you just got off the boat from Africa, because HIV is absolutely rife in certain African nations, you get off a plane or off a boat in the UK and you want these antivirals, it costs £25,000 per person per year. Well, if they're getting that, why shouldn't you be getting a little bit? Because sure as hell, when the tax bill goes up at the end of the year to pay for these health tourists, you'll be the one footing the bill. Now, that's not how a proper socialist system works. A socialist system works because it is a closed system where people are of a high trust, high IQ nature, and they see each other as family. So they protect the pot, they pay into the pot, and they only take from the pot if they absolutely need to. People who have never given into the pot should not be taking 25 grand chunks out of the pot for treatment for a disease they didn't even contract here in the UK. It's absolute nonsense. Kevin, what are your thoughts, my friend?
I totally agree. I think it's a very good point that socialism does work in high trust, highly educated, high IQ kind of community. And if you look at all the British socialized medicine systems, they were all enacted back when these countries were homogeneous, and they worked. That's why it's always been very hard to get public health care in America, because we are very diverse. And the more diverse we get, the people, white people, start realizing, well, if we go for that, I'm going to be standing in line behind these recent immigrants who don't pay anything into the system, and I'm still paying taxes. So they realize the system is not really geared for them as taxpayers, and they resent that. And I totally sympathize with that. I mean, you can imagine someone who's been here, grew up here, paid into the system, and then they have to stay and wait in line behind people who just came off the boat. And you see an awful lot. You talk about birth tourism. We see that as Mexican immigrants and people from Latin America come in, and the first thing they want to do is have a baby. Oh, it's an American citizen. Then that baby's eligible for welfare. And then they can milk the system. There are all these different programs. And they seen these astronomical estimates how much one illegal immigrant costs. They can't even legally access anything, but they, because they have children in this country, they are golden. And of course, there's a huge magnet. And now there are caravans forming at the border. Huge numbers of Central Americans are just wanting to get in because they've heard Biden is just fine with it.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to be another thing. I said there's going to be two things, or three things, I think, very quickly as we wrap up tonight, because I don't want to keep Kevin any longer than the two-hour show, although I could chat to him all night. And Kevin, I am going to do something now. Please come back for our 100th episode. We're going to do a four-hour special stream, so please come back for that. But I think we're going to see three things at the beginning of the Biden administration. One, COVID tyranny, massive, massive lockdowns, infringements on your rights. Number two, the rounding up of all patriots, nationalists, and a massive clampdown on free speech. And number three, the opening of the borders. There is going to be a massive opening of the floodgates, and you're going to see masses of people from all over the world pouring into America. So, and I think that will define the opening days of the Biden presidency. And as the presidency goes on, you'll see a fourth thing. You will see massive sweeping anti-white legislation, not just against patriots and nationalists, but against everybody who lives in America and subscribes to any form of traditionalist mindset. What are your thoughts? Wrapping up, Kevin, it's been great having you here tonight. Would you like to just comment quickly on your predictions for the Biden presidency?
Well, I completely agree with your take that's what they want to do. They want to shut down free speech. They want a more authoritarian society. They want to really, they want gun control is a big thing for these people. But those are the things that they want to do. They would like reparations. They would, in their dream world, they'd like to pack the court. They would like to bring in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. as states. They want to do all those things. But I remain hopeful that they're such slim majorities that they're not all radicals like Ocasio-Cortez or Elizabeth Warren and those kind of people. There are still some Democrats from the old Democrat Party, and I think they may be able to get rid of some of the worst stuff. But yeah, the things that are up to the administration, like enforcing the borders, they're not going to do the things that they used to do where they'd have to go stay in Mexico and try to get over. They're going to get over, and then they're going to say, please show up in court in next year or something. And guess what? 99% will not do that. They'll be in the country, and then they can hope for amnesty like everybody else gets eventually. So that's what we're going to see.
Jason, do you have a quick wrap-up of what you think for the Biden presidency before we end the stream?
Absolutely. The exact same thing. Underscore everything that both of you just said. They'll be moving in. I will also just add the one thing I think that might be useful to people, and that is that when it comes to border crossers and their effect on our society, we like to say in Going Free that each race of people has their distinct biospirit, that their collective projection of their biospirit or their instinct is what we refer to as culture. That's why different peoples always create different cultures and then different civilizations as a consequence. Those who are crossing the border and are being permitted to be in the country don't need to be given a piece of paper that says that they are a citizen in order for them to have the deleterious effect of their mere presence on Western civilization. Even though they might be wonderful people wherever they came from and whoever they are, they will still influence our civilization in a way that comports with their instinct and therefore is deleterious for our civilization and for the environments we like to live inside of. They don't need a license. They don't need to be given citizenship to be able to do so. And in fact, they can be kept in a this sort of state where they are halfway here, halfway there. And that can be useful to the Democrat Party from here on to perdition. It was wonderful being here with my dear longtime friend, the good doctor. And he's a marvelous gentleman. And I've spent many a great evening with this gentleman over the years. It's a pleasure to know you. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. It's a pleasure to be with everybody that was here today. And Mark, thank you so very much. And I'll pass it back so we can wrap up.
Well, thank you so much. We'll do some quick outros. Firstly, thank you to Kevin McDonald. It's been amazing having you on. And my apologies again for not inviting you on PWR sooner. You are invited back for the 100th episode. And I would love to have you here in the UK to give a speech at one of our conferences, although sadly it doesn't look like we'll be holding one of them anytime soon. But would you like to give yourself a quick outro? Tell us where we can find you and how we can contribute to your work.
Well, again, I'm the editor of Occidental Observer, OccidentalObserver.net. I also edit a more academic publication, an academic journal, Occidental Quarterly. My books are available at Barnes & Noble and the publisher. I also have kevinmcdonald.net if you want to see my various writings. So that's about it. I very much enjoy you guys. Very good conversation. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being with us. Jason, my friend, give yourself a quick outro. Tell us where we can find you.
NoWineGuilt.org, TheAfterParty.tv, and I look forward to seeing you all next week.
Well, thank you so much. Well, that was the show. We had nearly 1,900 watching here on DLive. We had 1,600 watching over on Radio Albion. Very, very good numbers again tonight. And that was in no small part due to the amazing Dr. Kevin McDonald. Always a pleasure to be in his company. Thank you so much to Kevin. Thank you so much to Jason. I will be on Jodie Kay's stream very shortly. So jump on over there for some more nationalist content. It is, of course, her birthday stream. I've been reliably informed she's just turned 21. And I will also be back on Friday on BitChute for my video. It'll be about the Q debacle. It is called Q, Disinformation, Lies, and Subversion. I have finished editing the audio. That will be up on Friday at 1 p.m., my usual time. Please help me share that. Let's try and get that in the trending section again. And I will be back on Sunday night for a retro gaming stream, which will be streamed here, non-X tagged to DLive, and also to YouTube. So be able to join me for that. I'll be doing a run-through of a retro game. And looking forward into later into the month, we will have Sarah Dye on PWR next week. And next Friday, myself and Laura will be doing a roundup of everything that's happened for PWR this for PA this month. And next Sunday night, we'll be doing the first of the PA book club. So we have plenty of good content coming up later this month. So yet again, thank you to Kevin. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to everyone who's donated so generously. If you want to get in touch, please email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And thank you, most of all, as always, to all the lovely people who have been in the chat and supported this stream. Fantastic. I will be going over and joining Jodie Kay straight away. Look after yourselves. See you again soon. And I will be with you Sunday night live. And my video will be out on Friday. Have a great evening and see you with Jodie Kay very shortly. Good night. Look after yourselves. See you.